Senate Judiciary Committee, June 3rd, 1991, 1 p.m.
Let's take House Bill 3167. Ron Hansman is here, Wally Price, Jim Marquis. We're going to go back to you right away. It's okay. You don't need to do all this shuffle. Just Bill. Thank you.
Okay, you had a nice weekend?
Good. They don't want to be here, do they? You want to call your bill up, Marquis? You got to hustle. You want to be heard.
I'm here. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Marquis, representing the Amalgamated Transit Union. And apologize, we were out in the hall because we thought you were going into work session before you took our bill. House Bill 3167, A. N. Gross, comes to you from the House Judiciary Committee. It is a bill that raises the level of assault where the person assaulted is the operator of a transit vehicle while that person is either operating or in control of the vehicle. This would make the assault a Class C felony. Presently, it would be a Class A misdemeanor. We believe this is an important bill. We've had a lot of assaults in the Portland area against our TriMet drivers. I have with me Mr. Ron Hinesman, the business agent of the Transit Union, and I believe he has a few words to say about the bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, this bill is extremely important.
We need your name for the record, Ron.
Oh, excuse me. It's Ron Hinesman. This bill is extremely important to the transit workers that we represent throughout the state. Assaulting public transit operators has been a continuing problem, particularly throughout the Portland region. We feel that this is not just a bill that protects transit drivers, but it protects the general public as well. If somebody anticipates or contemplates assaulting a bus driver, the potential risk for the people who are riding that bus at that particular time is high. So we see this as a bill that would provide the protection to the general public. It would send a strong deterrent to the people who would assault transit operators that we're not going to tolerate that type of behavior. So we urge your support of this bill. Again, it's one that to our transit workers is extremely important.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of either of the folks?
Well, yes, Mr. Chair, I guess I do have a question. This address is reckless assault committed recklessly. It doesn't address intentional or knowing assault. Was that an intentional distinction that was made?
No, this is just defined in the different degrees. Assault in the first, second, third degrees have different in intent. This one, I believe, more closely applies to what we want. That is, if somebody recklessly, without taking into account the general public that are passengers in that bus, assaults a bus driver, then that is recklessly endangering.
Madam Chair, the anomaly I see is that assault four can be committed knowingly, intentionally, or recklessly, and this elevates reckless assault to an assault three, but leaves intentional assault as an assault four. So it's just.
Well, I would ask that you work with Ingrid a little bit and make sure that we get it lined up appropriately and think about that.
Madam Chair, I believe the word recklessly was used simply to be consistent with the rest of the statute, and it would be, I believe that if it were intentional, it would also be reckless.
Okay.
Madam Chair, it is a distinct state of mind.
Okay, so, well, I suggest we visit around a little bit about it, try to make sure we can get what you need into the right.
We want the bill to be right, too, Madam Chair.
Yes, is the right word.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Correct configuration is better. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's move. Get a work session. Do we have enough committee members for a work session, or we want to wait? We have, let's take House Bill 2354 then right away. We have Larry Wilbrock, Charlie Williamson here.
I'm ready to proceed, Madam Chair.
Okay, thanks.
I'll be brief because I know you have a heavy agenda. I have some handouts here for the committee. A few more here, too. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lawrence Wilbrock. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. I'm the legislative chairperson. This bill that we're asking you to consider, 2354, amends existing ORS 30.020, which is a wrongful death statute. Because of a recent case, which is cited in the memorandum, and a copy of the case is appended to the three-page memorandum, the case is Eldridge versus Eastmoreland General Hospital, the doctrine of discovery, which applies generally to all torts, does no longer apply in wrongful death cases. Why is that important? It's now possible in a wrongful death case that someone could lose their claim for wrongful death before they die. And you ask, how can that possibly work? Well, the statute, as you know, begins to run from the occurrence of the injury causing death. Wrongful death claims do not begin to run from the date of death, but instead begin to run from the occurrence of the injury causing death. If that occurrence of the injury causing death is interpreted in some cases to be more than 3 years from the date of death, it is possible to lose your claim for wrongful death before you die. Under previous case law, again, which is appended, copies of the cases are appended, Rep versus Hahn and Shaughnessy versus Spray, those are both Court of Appeals opinions. The doctrine of discovery, or the discovery of three things under the case law, that you're injured, who injured you, and somehow there's been some negligence, was interpreted to apply by court decision to the wrongful death statute. But then the Eldridge case came down, a Supreme Court case, again, a copy of which is appended, and it said, no, the doctrine of discovery does not apply to wrongful death cases. So this simply attempts to harmonize the wrongful death statute with existing case law and statutes in general tort area. As you know, under the statute of limitations for all other torts, and in particular medical malpractice cases, it runs from the time when the plaintiff knew or should have known of the negligence. And in this particular case, we're asking to harmonize the statute with the other cases, statutes, and existing case law. I think Charlie can perhaps point out the amendments that we've attempted to make to the existing statute to create that harmony.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Charles Williamson with the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. Oregon Association of Defense Counsel testified against this bill in the House and mentioned two objections. One was that it was uncertain as to who would have to discover the injury, and we essentially amended the bill to make that as broad for the defense as possible, the personal representative of any of the beneficiaries. If any of them could have could have discovered it, then that's when the statute starts to run. And they also indicated that it was more, they felt that it was more uncertain as to when the time starts to run as opposed to when the injury occurred, as to when it should have been discovered. And we did what we could to satisfy that objection. That was to say that there's an absolute maximum time of 3 years after the date of death. And that it would run, so you won't have cases popping up well after that. That does not satisfy their objections, and I understand they're here today to testify still against the bill, but we feel we've done everything we could to make the statute as certain as possible. I'd like to just say that it's not only that you lose your cause of action before you die, but you lose your cause of action before you even know you have one under existing law. And that is the real gross unfairness of the existing law. The House looked at the legislative history of the original law, and apparently Judge Carson was on the committee that adopted it, and it did seem clear that when they adopted it that this was their intent. I don't think the Supreme Court as a whole is necessarily saying that the rule that they've applied is a good one, but I think they think this was just what the legislature intended at the time they adopted the wrongful death statute. We'd be glad to answer any questions.
Madam Chair, if I could just give a couple examples about how this does work in injustice. There's two kinds of cases in particular where I think you can see the injustice that might arise under existing laws that it now stands. In a toxics case, you may have an injury. You don't know you have it because of an exposure to toxics, and more than 3 years after that exposure, which ultimately causes the decedent's death, it's discovered there's a causal link, and it's, again, possible to lose that claim before you have it, you know you have it, or before you die. In a malpractice case for the failure to diagnose cancer, it's impossible, really, to say when the occurrence of the injury causing death occurs. Is it the second after the misdiagnosis, or is it the point of time in which the misdiagnosis causes a change from a chance of survival, probability of a survival, to a probability of death? And those are all unknown issues. If the law is harmonized with existing case law and the law that existed prior to the Eldridge case that was decided in 1989, those issues tend to work their way out on a case-by-case basis as the cases go through the court system. So I think those give two examples of the injustice that will occur under existing law.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shoemaker.
If we pass this, will this make the law for injuries that result in death, statute of limitations, the same as for injuries that do not result in death?
No, this would keep the 3 years.
And the others is two?
Yes.
Why should there be a difference? Well, if you're going to go from date of discovery,
in most
it is date of discovery on injuries that don't cause death, right?
Right. Yeah.
So in that sense, it's making this correspond with existing law.
Exactly.
Non-death cases.
I think the theory of the 3 years is that in many cases when someone dies, the family just doesn't get it together, even though they, in 99% of the cases, Senator Shoemaker, the auto accident happens and the person dies, and it takes people more than your normal 2 years to get it together to bring a lawsuit. So we feel that the 3 years really should be retained for the normal run-of-the-mill case, and this statute will apply to very, very few cases.
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, I think the philosophy always has been behind longer statutes in death cases, which I think exists in most every jurisdiction, is because the decedent is not available to assist in preparing and helping with the case, that more time and investigation and preparation are necessary. I think that's the implied rationale.
Most other jurisdictions have measured from date of discovery as opposed to date of occurrence.
I can't speak authoritatively on that, Senator. I think it varies. I think often the wrongful death statute runs from the date of death in many other jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Are there questions for the questions? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Scott Meyer.
I have some two written handouts as well. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Scott Meyer. I'm a lawyer representing Oregon Association of Defense Counsel. And I'm here today to testify against this bill. I urge the committee to reject its passage. As you know, it changes the starting date from the statute of limitations in a wrongful death action from the date of injury causing the death to the date when the injury is discovered. Now, under current law, when this limitation period is measured from the date of the event causing the injury, it's easily identified by objective standards. We have a date certain that all litigants and courts can apply with certainty. And when it is changed to a date when the injury is discovered or should have been discovered, it opens up a can of worms for the courts and litigants to deal with as to the application of when the statute of limitations starts. Right now, we've got something that's easy to measure and easy to deal with, and what the result of this bill will be to change that into something that is difficult to deal with, which will result in more litigated issues and more costs, greater costs of litigation, and the greater need for appellate decisions to set the standards. The big difference when applying the discovery rule to a wrongful death case is the fact that the decedent is in fact dead. So the decedent isn't there to provide any insight as to when she should have discovered the cause of her death, or if in fact she did know about the cause of the injury prior to her death. And so it results in a lot of conjecture and guesswork on the part of the courts, and can lead to some conflicting results and cause an increase in litigation issues. The other problem with the bill, and they did make some changes as a result of our objections, and one of the earlier questions we asked was, who does this apply to, the decedent, the personal representative, or who? And so they put in specifically that it can apply to any, essentially anyone, either the decedent or the personal representative. But if it's applied to someone other than the decedent, that introduces a whole new set of issues that will have to be litigated and decided in the Court of Appeals. For example, if it applies to the personal representative, what standard is that representative held to? Does the personal representative step into the shoes of the decedent, and is that person held to the standard of a reasonable decedent? Or is that person simply held to the standard of a reasonable personal representative as to what should a reasonable personal representative have discovered about the cause of the decedent's death? And again, we have a whole new set of issues that will have to be answered in the appellate courts for this rule to apply. Right now, we've got a specific, predictable, easily workable limitation period. 2354 would change that into a system requiring increased litigation of issues and the need for further appellate decisions. Right now, we've got something that works well, and we think it ought to be kept. Just one more comment about that Eldridge case and the prior law. Now, this particular statute of limitations was changed from 2 years to 3 years in 1967 by the legislature. In 67 and before, for many years before, throughout the entire century, it was 2 years from the date of death. In 67, the legislature thought it would be more fair to make it 3 years from the date of injury causing death. And at that time, the legislature realized that we could have a result where the statute could expire before death even occurred. And if I can just quote a very short section of the legislative history of that bill in 1967 as set forth in the Eldridge opinion on page 504, and you've got it in the handout. It says, Senator Cook, at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on May 15, 1967, noted that a person could die 1 day short of the expiration of the 3-year period, and the right to an action would be lost the next day. Representative Carson, a sponsor of the bill who testified at the Senate committee hearing, agreed that such a result was arbitrary, but stated that the House Judiciary Committee was of the opinion that a date certain was needed and that a 3 years was a reasonable choice. That's what our opinion is. A date certain is much more workable in the day-to-day litigation that would be dealing with this bill. And so what we should do is pick a date, pick a period of years, and in this case it's 3 years, as Senator Shoemaker pointed out, 2 years longer than a regular injury case, and stick with it, and it'll be easily applied at less costs in the courts.
Yeah,
Okay. Other questions?
No, sure.
Should I make the first one?
What is the present statute of limitations?
3 years from the date of it.
No, on when there's no death?
2 years.
Yeah, I thought you said this was 2 years longer than that. This is 1 year longer.
1 year longer. Excuse me. If I did, I misspoke.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if you want a date certain, why not take death as the date certain and go 3 years from then?
That's fine. We would have absolutely no objection to that at all. That's the way it was before 1967. And that's a very easily workable statute that everybody knows exactly how it's applied, and you've got straightforward litigation with resulting in fewer litigation costs and more expedited litigation.
Thank you. We've got a little compromise here.
We would agree with the date of death, Madam Chair. That's with the 3 years from the date of death. That's fine.
Without the application of the discovery rule?
Yeah. I mean, it's the bill already provides for that. You know, it just provides for a shorter time when there's an injury substantially prior to death. But we would be glad to take 3 years from the date of death.
It seems a lot easier than arguing over when you should have known.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tom Cooney is here to speak to this bill. I know he's going to say, well, it's not, date of death is not quite right. We've got to have a little more. Got to talk about discovery. Got to talk about, well, that's.
And I conclude by comment. Actually, the statute of limitations ought to run.
Right. Tom.
Thank you. Tom Cooney, outside counsel.
Some of us have been here too long.
Oregon Medical Association. We oppose the bill in its present form. The present death statute puts a 3-year cap on it. And the thing that we fight and have been fighting since 1975 is the extended unpredictability in these malpractice cases. So you have the question now of extending this beyond a period of time than we can predict, and it's harder and harder to defend yourself. If you run it 3 years from the date of death, the event may have happened 10, 11, 12 years ago, and you can be out 10, 15 years, and it is not an easy task to defend yourself in those types of cases. The other question that you have is the question of the ultimate repose statute. If you're going to go 3 years from the date of death, we do have an ultimate repose statute in Oregon, 5 years in Med-Mal and 10 in ordinary cases. Are you intending that this 3 years from the date of death would go beyond the ultimate repose statute? And I don't think that's really what you want to do. So if you're going to go into something like this, you want to make sure that you clarify that it does not go beyond any ultimate repose statute, because those are set in place for the very purpose of avoiding the very thing that I'm talking about, is the difficulty with defending oneself years down the line. We would prefer to see the bill left as it has been, 3 years from the injury causing the death.
Senator Bunn.
Madam Chair, well, if you agree that the ultimate repose protects you from the thing that you just talked about, then if we leave that intact
alone
and say, well, you've got 3 years from death notwithstanding the ultimate repose, then you've still got what you need.
Well, to a limited extent, because now you've got 3 years in which you have to worry about defending a death case. Now you're going to have as much as 10. And the farther out we get, the harder it is to defend yourself, and you get lost.
But at the same time, you talked about the 15 years, you know, you're not giving both sides equal consideration, are you?
Well, I think 3 years from the injury causing the death is reasonable, is what I'm saying.
If you don't die within 3 years, it wasn't caused by the injury?
Well, it's no different than a 10-year ultimate repose or a 5-year Med-Mal repose.
So really, we're giving you a 3-year ultimate repose in this instance?
Yes.
Thank you.
Tom, how do you react to 2 years from date of discovery so that this is the same as any other personal injury?
Well, that has merit. However, I can see the arguments that the plaintiff's bar makes, that you don't have the benefit of a living witness to help you. And so we've kind of all grown up with starting out with red hair, now white hair there, but he kind of knows about the three-year statute, so it's not so much of a trap for lawyers. I think there's some justice in that.
Further questions? Thank you. Charlie, come on up.
We intend that the ultimate, or the statute of ultimate repose, would still apply to these cases. For medical, it would be 5 years. If that's not clear, it should be added to the bill, but 5 years from the date of the injury, from the date of the negligence, and it's not date of discovery in the ultimate repose situation. So if the doctors are living with 5 years from the date of the malpractice now, they certainly shouldn't get it shortened because the person dies. So we would like to point out that you will not ever have a situation of this 10 to 15 years. The statutes of ultimate repose would still apply in all these cases.
I think that answers Senator Bunn's question, too, doesn't it?
Madam Chair, may I just
Okay, quickly. Yeah. We're not in a work session.
Sorry, it's just maybe to correct something I've said earlier about, in response to Senator Bunn's suggestion about the 3 years from the date of death, and I didn't think that through completely because although it sounds like something that we would advocate because of its simplicity and without the application of the discovery rule, that's what we like. It does create some problems that Mr. Cooney pointed out that we would have to think through again. And also, it would have the effect of reviving a claim. For example, say a person on day in year one is injured, and then on year three, the statute of limitations for that injury has expired because it's only 2 years. That person cannot file suit. But if the person dies 20 years later, say in year 23, then the person can file suit again for a wrongful death claim. So you've got a situation where
this are we stretching? Ultimate
repose.
We are stretching.
Well, all right, I used too many years.
We can take it stretch.
I used too many years, but there would be.
We're getting so we anticipate all the time.
My point is there's a period of time there where you wouldn't be able to file suit, and then just waiting for the death to file suit, it doesn't make much sense. That, in addition to the points Mr. Cooney made, on second thought, I don't think that would work.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, let's go ahead and move to our little session of work sessions here today. We'll start sort of from the bottom, House Bill 3348. I'm going to get up to some of the more controversial ones, I think, as we go. 3348 is the Marine Spill Response Corporation. We had a fair amount of discussion with their incurring of liability in the process of cleaning up and not taking anything away from the original person who spilled, nor anything beyond, what was it, what's the standard we have here?
Grossly negligent.
They still have to be responsible if they were grossly negligent.
But that's amendments to ag.
Madam Chair, there are no amendments to the bill.
No amendments to the bill.
Madam Chair, I'd move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. we need, are the sponsors here? We probably ought to get their word in blood that we're not going to have any other floating issues attached to this bill when it gets to the House.
Well,
or when it gets to the, well, it won't. That's
we're not going to do this. The House is it. This thing going.
There are no amendments. Okay,
no
so
amendments.
It's up to us
to decide
whether
law.
We want to amend this bill with all those bad things.
No, good bill.
Okay, Senator Shoemaker's moved House Bill 3348 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Madam Chair, I'm going to resist the temptation to ask that this go to Ag and Natural Resources Committee, although that's where the major oil spill legislation has originated, and this, to me, is properly ought to be part of that discussion. I've had a chance to talk with the sponsors at length, and they make a good case, but I kind of have this old-fashioned sense that if you're negligent, you ought to be responsible. So I can't support this bill.
Anyone else? Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Ben.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
No.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Okay. 2374.
Madam Chair, there's a proposed amendment to this bill.
Okay.
In keeping with our hearing rules.
Bill has amendments. He will explain in keeping with our hearing. 2374. This is a court administrator bill. It has to do with requesting financial information from banks and other financial institutions to verify indigency or not. Bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill was last before us on May 29th.